We come back to the book of Daniel tonight, and I'll tell you, quite frankly, chapter 10 is a pretty amazing chapter. I've never preached from the next three chapters, the last three chapters of the book of Daniel that I remember. I don't know that I've really studied them that deeply in passing and as a part of prophecy, but tonight we're going to get into the 10th chapter. There's three chapters to go in the book of Daniel. The first six have been about basically stories and visions of King Nebuchadnezzar and the great stories of Daniel in the lion's den and the three Hebrew children in the fire and others. And then the last six chapters of the book of Daniel are pretty much Daniel's vision that God gives him of the future and what's going to happen. And they have been very interesting as well. The last three chapters, 10, 11, and 12, really go together. They do fit together very well, especially chapter 10 and chapter 11, because it's about a specific time in history. And it's very insightful about world history at the time and how God's timing and God's plan coming together with world history and leading up to the coming of Jesus. It points to it. It's interesting by that. But also these chapters, the last three chapters in the book of Daniel, are about spiritual warfare and the a little vision of, a little pulling back of God's curtain of the mystery of what's going on unseen spiritually in the world and spiritual warfare that takes place. It's very interesting. At the same time as those two dynamics, the last three chapters are specifically about two world empires, the Persian Empire and the Greek Empire. And we've mentioned that before because that's been a part of some of the study in the book of Daniel before, but we come to chapter 10 and chapter 11, and boy, do we have a very pulled back curtain on a specific time in world history. The second great empire that Nebuchadnezzar dreams about being destroyed by the third great empire, and who it is and how it happens, some of the specifics about it. Chapters 10 and 11 are not describing a new time period, but taking part of Nebuchadnezzar's dream and a part of the dream of Daniel that he had in chapter 8, and more detail is given, more specifics are given, so it's a display of the future and how it does point to and come to the coming of Christ. Daniel in chapter 8 had a vision of a ram and a goat. And we looked at that when we were there in that chapter many, many, many weeks ago. Of course, this study kind of each week is different depending on what we have going on each Sunday night. But back in chapter 8, Daniel had a vision of a ram and a goat. The ram was the Persian Empire, and the goat was the Greek Empire. The reason we know that is it tells us that in the text. That's not a mystery. And Daniel has this dream of how this goat is mighty and strong, and then all of a sudden on the scene comes this goat with a horn, and they fight, and the goat overpowers and destroys the ram. And so that's his vision in chapter 8. Earlier in Daniel's life, while Belshazzar was king of Babylon, so you have the first empire, Babylon, and Daniel has this dream in chapter 8. Fairly early, or at least midway in his life and all the events that unfold that are recorded in the book of Daniel, you had the vision of the ram and the goat. And then in chapter 10, you have the same time period described in a different way, but with more of a futuristic look at the coming of Christ. The ram, remembering, is the Persian Empire, where Daniel had his first dream. And then you have the goat,
that's going to come later, which will be the Greek Empire. And those two chapters, chapter 8 and 10, are very interesting about that. When you read the book of Daniel, I said before, the chronology can be a little confusing because there's so many things that are happening. And then all of a sudden it seems like, well, that vision was about this event. You can't just read it straight through like you would the story of Abraham, which is chronological in every way. But this story of Belshazzar is very significant. You remember the story of Belshazzar and the writing on the wall? Well, Daniel had the dream that's described in chapter 8 that I spoke of a moment ago when he became king. Very soon after he became king, Daniel had the first dream. And it was about 30 years later that he has this dream in chapter 10. Although they're describing the same events, they come about 30 years apart. There's a difference in them. And so it would be as the handwriting on the wall that is announcing the end of that kingdom, the first kingdom. And you remember Belshazzar, because of his arrogance and his pride, he has a dream, and then Daniel tells him he's going to lose the kingdom. And then on that night, or that part of that, the handwriting on the wall, and Daniel interprets it and says, even this night your kingdom is coming to the end. It wasn't just Belshazzar's kingdom that coming to an end, but it was the end of the first kingdom described by Daniel. There are four. And that night was the end of the first one, announcing this handwriting on the wall that the first kingdom was coming to an end. In Daniel's earlier dream, he envisions this ram, which will be the second kingdom, but then he looks further into the third kingdom. And so when Daniel's living, he's describing transition from the first kingdom to the second, but he is now prophesying about the next kingdom, which won't happen for 200 years. So chapter 10 is about events that are going to take place 200 years after Daniel's life. It's prophecy. It's God giving Daniel this vision of what's going to happen in 200 years. Not only politically between the Babylonians and the Persians and the Greeks, but militarily what's going to happen. And in chapter 11, you have military events described that are described in prophetic ways, but they very specifically describe things that happened to that empire, the goat empire with the prong. And chapter 11 is going to be the specifics of that. But listen to this verse from chapter 8. The two-horned ram that you saw represents the kings of Media and Persia. The shaggy goat is the king of Greece. In case we're not sure what all these opaque descriptions are, verse 20 of chapter 8 tells us specifically what this vision is in chapter 8. It's about Persia and it's about Greece coming up. Well, now we fast forward to chapter 10. That's chapter 8. We know it's about Persia and about Greece. Now we fast forward to chapter 10. Into a second vision that Daniel has. At the time of the fall of the second kingdom. So now this vision is going 200 years down the road and describing what's going to happen in the next transition. The first kingdom, Babylon. The second kingdom, Persia. Now Daniel's having a dream about the third kingdom in Greece and what's going to happen. And so chapter 10 and chapter 11 are about that time period. Greece destroying Persia. And then what happens in the time that Greece is the world dominating power? And not just politically, but it's about what happens to God's people during that time. Not just about war and Alexander the Great, who is referred to in the dream. His name is not in there, but he and then those that succeeded him are described in that chapter. But what happens to God's people during this time? And that's really what Daniel cares about. You remember, all this started because Daniel prayed that God would restore his people. These dreams came because Daniel had been praying that 70 years had passed, and now, God, you said after 70 years you'll restore your people. And so Daniel begins to plead with God, God, make it happen. And God says, Daniel, I'm going to show you how it's going to happen. I'm going to show you the succession of empires that's going to lead to the coming of Jesus, the coming of Christ. By the time you get to the end of chapter 12 of the book of Daniel, God has given Daniel this amazing 538-year picture of how God's going to come to the place of bringing Christ. And so Daniel is so prophetic about the coming of Jesus and the meaning of Jesus. I kind of describe what chapter 10 and chapter 11 are. Chapter 12 is a different, it's part of that, those last three chapters, but it's different, and as we come to it, we'll talk about. Okay, that's kind of an introduction. I want to read chapter 10 of Daniel. Listen to the narration. Listen to how Daniel gets this second dream. This dream that we'll describe 200 years later. Listen to how it comes to him in chapter 10. In the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a revelation was given to Daniel, who was called Belteshazzar. Its message was true, and it concerned a great war. The understanding of the message came to him in a vision. At that time, I, Daniel, mourned for 3 weeks. I ate no choice food, no meat, no wine touched my lips, and I used no lotions at all until the 3 weeks were over. On the 24th day of that first month, as I was standing on the bank of the great river, the Tigris, I looked up, and there before me was a man dressed in linen with a belt of the finest gold around his waist. His body was like chrysolite, his face like lightning, his eyes like flaming torches, his arms and legs like the gleam of burnished bronze, and his voice like the sound of a multitude. I, Daniel, was the only one who saw the vision. The men with me did not see it, but such terror overwhelmed them that they fled and hid themselves. So I was left alone, gazing at this great vision. So I was left alone, gazing at this great vision. I had no strength left. My face turned deathly pale. I was helpless. Then I heard him speaking, and as I listened to him, I fell into a deep sleep, my face to the ground. A hand touched me and set me trembling on my hands and knees. He said, Daniel, you are highly esteemed. Consider carefully the words I am about to speak to you, and stand up, for I have now been sent to you. And when he said this to me, I stood up trembling. Then he continued, do not be afraid, Daniel. Since the first day that you set your mind to gain understanding and to humble yourself before your God, your words have been heard, and I have come to respond to them. But the prince of the Persian kingdom resisted me 21 days. Then Michael, one of the chief princes, came to me because I was detained there with the king of Persia. Now I have come to explain to you what will happen to your people in the future, for the vision concerns a time yet to come. While he was saying this to me, I bowed with my face to the ground and was speechless. Then one who looked like a man touched my lips, and I opened my mouth and I began to speak. And I said to the one standing before me, I am overcome with anguish because of the vision, my Lord, and I am helpless. How can I, your servant, talk with you, my Lord? My strength is gone, and I can hardly breathe. Again, the one who looked like a man touched me and gave me strength. Do not be afraid, O man, highly esteemed. He said, peace, be strong. It says, be strong now, be strong. When he spoke to me, I was strengthened and said, speak, my Lord, since you have given me strength. So he said, do you know why I've come to you? Soon I will return to fight against the prince of Persia, and when I go, the prince of Greece will come. But first I will tell you what is written in the book of truth. No one supports me against them except Michael, your prince. And in the first year of Darius the Mede, I took my stand to support and protect him. Wow. Whew. There's a lot in that. Let's start with when this dream specifically came to Daniel. We know it was in the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia. Now, what does that mean? Belshazzar, the writing on the wall, Darius brought his army into Babylon, destroyed Babylon that night, and then you have Darius described as king. Well, that description is not complete. He was the ruler because he was the general that conquered Babylon. Cyrus was the king. Darius, although he's called the king here, and he was the king's appointed under king, if you would call it that, but Cyrus was the king of the Persian Empire. And so when Darius became king, it was because Cyrus had appointed him and allowed him he conquered Babylon, and so Darius was called the king, although Cyrus was really the king of the whole empire. It's more like Darius was the king of just the Babylonian city and that area, but Cyrus was the king of Persia. In the third year, so it would have been in the third year of Darius as well, which makes sense when you put down the timeline. And this would have been about 538 BC. Just gives you a date in reference to how long it would be until Daniel chapter 12 is fulfilled, and three chapters later. So you have in the third year of King Cyrus, and Cyrus and Darius overlap according to history. Darius was in charge, but Cyrus was the king above him, the empire king. So this would have been in the third year of Cyrus, and it would have been 3 years after Babylon had been conquered. Already, Daniel is seeing the end of this empire 200 years later. As he starts this dream, it's troubling to Daniel, and you read how upset he is and afraid he is and traumatized Daniel is by this dream. This is an incredibly real dream of warfare and armies. And 3 years in to the second kingdom, Daniel is told what's going to happen to that kingdom. It's going to be destroyed. He's got 195 more years until the Greek Empire takes over the Persian Empire. Daniel, of course, will be gone long before that. But just inside the second kingdom, you have the description of the destruction of that second kingdom and the coming of the third kingdom. Also, kind of thinking of the timeline and when it happens, this vision takes place chronologically right around the same time as Daniel in the lion's den, very early into the reign of King Darius, or King Cyrus, if you think of him as the king of the entire empire. It may have happened, this dream may have come to Daniel before Daniel went in the lion's den, or it may have happened right after, but it had to have probably happened within 1 or 2 or 3 years for sure when you look at the timeline and the context. So I kind of think of Daniel in lion's den as kind of here, and then later on Daniel has all these visions. But actually the visions are intertwined into these events that we find in the book of Daniel. This vision may have come to him when Darius was still in charge, the general, who was left in charge for a while before Cyrus kind of assumed more of an active role over the whole kingdom. But Daniel in the lion's den takes place with specifically Darius. We know he was the first ruler. He was given the assignment of ruling Babylon. He conquered it, and he ruled Babylon. And he was the man in charge when Daniel went into the lion's den. So, I don't think human history has recorded how long Darius was in that role, but it wasn't very long. Very soon into the role, he went back to wherever he was from, and Cyrus took on the direct governing of Babylon. So early on, after Babylon was destroyed, Daniel goes into the lion's den because of Darius. In fact, when you go back to the story, it says that Darius chose a number of people to be in charge, and Daniel, I'll just summarize it, Daniel elevated himself and did everything great and protected the everything that Darius wanted him to. And Daniel said, or Darius said, well, Daniel, he's just extraordinary in every way. And then you have all these other guys who are getting jealous of Daniel. And that happens very soon into that reign of Darius. And so they want to destroy Daniel, and they come up with this plan. We can't find anything wrong with him, but how about if we come up with this? Darius, he's pretty egotistical. How about we'll kind of trick him in to making a law that we know will trap up Daniel? That happens very early on, and he does that. So Daniel in the lion's den takes place somewhere right around this great vision that we have in chapter 10. Daniel's vision begins with an incredible, incredible encounter and presence of this being that most commentators believe is Jesus. And I'll tell you why. This being that is so brilliant that it brings terror to all that see it. And to Daniel's friends who don't see this, but they sense the amazing presence of something, so much so that all Daniel's friends, they can't take it. And they don't see it. They're not a part of it. But yet they're terrorized, it says. But such terror overwhelmed them that they fled and hid themselves. Daniel doesn't do that. This being appears to Daniel and he's shaking and he's upset and he sees this incredible appearance of a brilliant something. What's interesting is this description in Daniel 10 is very, very close to the description in the Revelation chapter 1 of the appearance of Jesus. That's why commentators say you have prophecy in Daniel, you have prophecy in Revelation, you have all these parallels and similarities and phrases that are used in Daniel and the book of Revelation, and this is the key thing. This description of this being who in Revelation is identified as Jesus, and so it's the same description, and so it seems here called the Son of Man that is Jesus himself. So Daniel, this incredible dream in chapter 10 begins with this appearance of a great man. Just listen to some of the description. He's dressed in linen. He has a belt of gold, chrysolite, face that looks like lightning, eyes that are flaming torches, arms and legs burnished bronze, the sound of the voice of many multitudes. You have this incredible description of Jesus that somehow Daniel sees or feels or senses or visions or dreams about. Whatever state Daniel's in, it's kind of hard. It's called a vision. Sometimes he's awake, sometimes he's not. But this vision begins with the appearance of this incredibly amazing being that we believe is Jesus. And it reminds us also of another scripture in the book of Isaiah. Woe is me, I am undone. When Isaiah beholds God himself on the throne. So you really have three events. You have Daniel, you have Isaiah. Isaiah would have been first, and then Daniel, and then Revelation of this picture of some kind of a being that physically or spiritually appears in this dream, and it's absolutely incredible. And Daniel's response is like the prophets. Woe is me, I am undone. He falls away at the amazing holiness of this being. The other men couldn't even stand to be in the presence. They fled away. They couldn't even do that. But Daniel's able to somehow fall down and he's terrified, it says, in verse 8. Well, how does he respond to this? Verse 8 said he was terrified. There was this sense of fear with him. In this time of mourning, one translation says, I was mourning because of this. Why? Maybe because of the content of it. Because the content of this dream is scary and it's dreadful and it's horrible. And Daniel seems like he was very loyal to his king, whoever it was. He seemed to be very loyal to Nebuchadnezzar, and he told him the truth, and he spoke the truth of God, and he didn't undermine him, he didn't undercut him, he didn't want him to be destroyed, but God did it, and Daniel did what he was told as a prophet, and the same with Belshazzar. And then you have Darius and Cyrus, Xerxes. You have these kings, and Daniel is not trying to undercut any of them. He seems to be loyal to them. And he's mourning what is going to happen. And it maybe wasn't just about the king and the kingdom, but it was spiritually about the people and what was going on in the world. And Daniel has this 21-day fast. He eats no choice food. Verse 2 says, "At that time I, Daniel, mourned for 3 weeks." Mourned for 3 weeks. This is deep for Daniel. Mourn for 3 weeks until those 3 weeks are over. Now remember the 3 weeks. There's something very significant about 3 weeks there. This dream, as I said, is a continuation of chapter 8, but with more detail and almost coming from a different perspective. So what is this being? Why is this being here? Well, we're really not told why Jesus appears here. What we're told is that another being comes and talks to Daniel. It's like Daniel cannot. He can't watch. He can't see. He must turn away from Jesus himself and the glory and the power. And again, God is giving Daniel this precious view. He pulls the curtain back and says, "Daniel, you're going to see something that Isaiah did 700 years ago. And at the end of time, my people will see, but Daniel, I'm going to show you something." And it was overwhelming to Daniel. And then a different being comes as Daniel is slumped over. Then we're told that another being, an angel, comes to him and speaks to him. And so you have a different being than Jesus. You have an angel that comes. And he says in verse 10 to Daniel, this is how Daniel describes, "A hand touched me and set me trembling on my knees and my hands. He said, 'Daniel, you are highly esteemed. Consider carefully the words I am about to speak to you and stand up, for I have now been sent to you.' And when he said this to me, I stood up, still trembling." I stood up, trembling. So Daniel hears the angel, and now he's gone from Jesus himself to an angel, which I don't know how much different that would be for fear and awesomeness and all those things. But Daniel has felt the hand of an angel before, earlier, when the angel touched him and spoke to him and talked to him. But here the angel says, "Daniel, get up. You are highly esteemed, Daniel. God's noticed you." Same thing that God would say later about Mary: "You found favor in my eyes." And then the angel says, "Daniel, I want you to listen carefully to what I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you about the future. I want you to listen carefully about that." You think, Daniel, this is an incredible man. God's going to pull back the veil. When we think about how amazing God touched Daniel, I'm reminded of some things about Daniel's life that I want to mention tonight. Number one is Daniel has been a man of prayer all his life. Consistently praying every day, no matter who's watching. What's Daniel doing? He is such an example of prayer. And it should tell us something about his heart and about why God would choose a man like this. He was a deep, deep man of prayer. He also was a very intelligent man, had to have been, to rise to the place that he was. God had gifted him. Not only was he a man of prayer, but he was a gifted man. And God was able to help Daniel to master the culture, the language, the relationships, and all those things. And we know, because Daniel lived a long time, we have many stories how consistent Daniel was. There's just nothing in the book that tells us anything bad about Daniel. I doubt he was perfect, but the book the Bible presents Daniel as an incredibly deep, spiritual, consistent man. He also is a man, as I said, trusted. He was trusted by Nebuchadnezzar. He's trusted by Belshazzar. He's trusted by Darius. Darius was brokenhearted. He had to go in a lion's den. Cyrus, Xerxes. Daniel is trusted by others, not just God, but by secular people as well. And then the thing that just stands out about Daniel is how humble his spirit is, how he, how Daniel just had a view of God and life that was incredible. God chose Daniel because of the uniqueness and the amazing thing. Listen to this verse. This is what the angel then says to Daniel. Since the first day that you set your mind to gain understanding and to humble yourself before your God, your words were heard, and I have come in response to them. Wow. Angel says, Daniel, you don't know, but 63 years ago you were praying and God heard that prayer. 50 years ago, you were praying and God heard that prayer. 30 years ago, you know, when you were praying about the three Hebrew children going into the fire, I was there. I heard that prayer. Daniel, God has heard your prayer. And now God has come in response to that. He sent the messenger, the angel, to give you a vision in response to the faithfulness of who you are, to your humility and to your prayers. So do not be afraid, he says here in verse 12. Then he continues, do not be afraid, Daniel, since the first day you set your mind to gain understanding and humble yourself. Long ago, Daniel had set his heart on doing what's right. As a young man, as a boy, as a young teenager, I mean, 8 or 9 years old, maybe, when he was taken captive, don't know exactly, somewhere along the way he goes to Babylon, and way back there, that young man decided that he was going to respond to God and honor God. And God heard that. He heard that in the little boy. He heard that in that teenager. He heard that in the young man. And all his life, Daniel was used incredibly by God. But the key is the heart of Daniel. The humble spirit of Daniel, the consistency of Daniel, the obedience of Daniel, the prayers of Daniel. What an incredible picture of what God wants in us. Also in the story you have the unique picture of how God touched Daniel. When he spoke to me, I was strengthened and said, "Speak, my Lord, since you have given me strength." Daniel was so overwhelmed by the presence of Jesus and this angel and this message and all that, that he's just weak. And so the angel comes and says, I'm going to strengthen you so you can listen. And so he touches Daniel, and Daniel starts to get his legs. He starts to get his strength. And I'm reminded of all the times that the angel has helped Daniel. Just think of the lion's den, how the angel came and protected him and strengthened him and gave him the ability, the resolve to do what's right no matter what the king said and the other people did. Even in the lion's den, Daniel was close to God. He was close to the messenger. And so then the angel goes on to tell Daniel that he would have come earlier, but something kept that angel from coming and telling Daniel this vision. The angel says, Daniel, I would have been here 21 days earlier if it wasn't for something that happened. He tells Daniel that I'd have come earlier, but I was detained. The angel was detained. Something kept the angel from coming and speaking to Daniel. And so he goes on to tell about that. And he says, because I was fighting against the prince of Persia. The prince of Persia. So now we have kind of the introduction of what we call spiritual warfare. We have all these physical descriptions and kingdom descriptions and king descriptions and all that stuff. But here we have introduced into the book of Daniel, and for us to see a picture of something that's going on in our world that we don't always see. Something that is going on
in the days of Daniel, in the days of the Old Testament, and heading toward the days of Christ coming, something, some forces, an army, warfare between angels and demons that, again, God chose to just pull back the curtain a little bit. Daniel, I'm going to tell you a little bit about that. I'm going to tell you something that you probably, you know, not too many people understand. Daniel, I would have come earlier with a vision, but I couldn't get away. I was fighting with the prince of Persia, the second kingdom. The prince of Persia. What is that? Who is that? Well, we'll come to that in a minute. But Buddy said, if Michael wouldn't have come, I don't know how long it would have been before I could have come. So here's this angel describing that he was fighting and he couldn't get away for 21 days. You remember what Daniel was doing for 21 days? He was praying. He was fasting. He was mourning. He was calling out to God. 21 days. And then later he hears, you know, Daniel, I'd have been here, but there was a struggle going on for 21 days. The power of this man seeking God's heart. Incredible 21 days. So he says, I probably wouldn't have been able to come except Michael showed up. Michael came and he helped me so I could get away. So who's Michael? Well, we do know a little bit about Michael. Michael is the only angel described in the Bible as an archangel, and meaning he is a supervisor of angels. He is a leader of angels. He is one who other angels work with and work for. Somehow Michael's in a high place of being an angel, along with one other angel, and that's Gabriel. Although Gabriel's not ever described as an archangel, only Michael is. But this angel says, Daniel, I couldn't get away until Michael came and helped me, and then I was able to get away. So who is this? Well, we know some things about Michael. He's listed some things about him in the book of Hebrews. All the angels are described as being subject to Jesus. Interesting, Michael is the only angel recorded in the scriptures to have argued with Satan and talk to Satan. I mean, there may be many other incidents, but it was over Moses' body of all things that God allowed to be in the scriptures. That Michael argued with Satan about Moses' body. We won't go into that story, but you could look it up. It's interesting. But there is a little glimpse. Somebody pulled back the curtain. Michael, you know, back there arguing with Satan. You know, we don't know a lot about it, but it tells us that there's more going on than we realize. The Bible records four words that Michael speaks. Four words. And that is, the Lord rebuke you to Satan. The Lord rebuke you to Satan. There may have been many others. Jude, the book of Jude. How long has it been since I've read the book of Jude? It's been a while. But if you want to read about Michael, read the book of Jude, which is a very short and simple and but it talks about Michael, the archangel. And then the last thing about Michael that I just want to mention is Michael is described as a military commander. Let's read that one. Turn in, if you want to, Revelation chapter 12, verse 7. And read what it says about Michael. Or I can read it to you. And there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought back. But he was not strong enough, and they lost their place in heaven. The great dragon was hurled down, that ancient serpent called the devil or Satan, who leads the whole world astray. He was hurled to the earth, and his angels with him. Again, the curtain just came back a little bit about who Michael was, and warfare, spiritual warfare. You get the idea that, oh, we only understand a tip about what
Daniel got to see a little bit of as God gave him this great vision. This unseen, God gave Daniel a glimpse. No wonder he was terrified. I mean, no wonder that Daniel was so overwhelmed by this vision and dream. Wow. It reminds us of Ephesians chapter 6, where Paul seems to give us a little bit of a curtain pulled back too, and he says, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers. Paul gives us a glimpse, and then he goes on to say, therefore put on the full armor of God that you can stand against the devil's schemes. There's things going on out there, and both physically and spiritually, and this dream of Daniel shows us that. I think of what we read about spiritual warfare, the importance of prayer, resisting the enemy, putting on the full armor of God, truth. And so the angel, as we move along here, the angel says, now I have come to explain to you what will happen to your people in the future, for the vision concerns a time to come. Again, very clearly, we're told what this vision is about. It's about what happens to the people of God. What's going to happen to the Jewish people in the future? And chapter 11 will give a very painful, painful look at what's going to happen to the people of God during the kingdom of Greece. That will lead up to the 164 BC and Antiochus Epiphany, and how he brings a pig into the temple and sacrifices the pig in the Jewish temple and desecrates the temple terribly. Chapter 11 is going to describe that event to take place and how ugly the Greek Empire is and how ugly they treat the Jewish people. And that was an ugly period in Jewish history. The intertestamental period that we don't have in our Bibles, we don't have stories about that. In other Catholic Bibles and Eastern Orthodox have a lot of stories about this time period, but we don't in our Bible. But this vision looks forward to that time, and it says, this is what's going to happen to God's people. These are the leaders. First, you have the great horn, Alexander the Great. Then you have the four that come after him, which were the four that the kingdom was divided into when Alexander the Great died at the age of 31 or whatever it was when he died. But you have a start of that. So you have way back the dream of Nebuchadnezzar and four kingdoms, the head, the shoulders, and chest. And then you have the girdle. Then you have the iron, Rome, Greece, Persia, Babylon. And then in chapter 8, you have the four beasts. Another picture, another description of the four beasts. The third one is Greece. And then you have in chapter 10, you have in chapter 8, the ram and the goat. And then in chapter 10, it's described. All of these visions are related. It's not like they're separate about, they talk about history. They talk about God's people and what's going to happen in the future. And then finally tonight, I can't believe it's 20 after 7. Wow. I've really enjoyed this chapter. It's been interesting. The Prince of Persia. So you have the King of Persia, and then you have the Prince of Persia. And you remember the angel said, I was fighting against the Prince of Persia. And Michael got me away, and then he says, and then the prince of Greece is going to come into it as well. So he said, do you know why I've come to you? Soon I will return to fight against the prince of Persia, and when I go, the prince of Greece will come. But first I will tell you what is written in the book of truth. No one supports me against them except Michael, your prince. And in the first year of Darius the Mede, I took my stand to support and protect him. So in the first year of Darius, in first one, the third year of Cyrus, so the angel tells Daniel, now into the third year, I've been fighting. I've been fighting. And this is what's going to happen in the future ahead. So you have the story of the Greeks and their impact on the Persians, and that's the goat ramming and killing and destroying the Persians. But you also have the Greeks fighting against God's people. So you have in this vision both a military description, a political description, but then you have the spiritual description of the impact of the Greeks on God's people in the Old Testament, the Jewish people. Again, leading up to the fourth kingdom, which isn't talked about yet in chapter 11, the Romans, and then the kingdom that lasts forever and ever and ever, Jesus. So, to me, very interesting. It's a lot to think about. Like, I just want to read that chapter over and over again and think about that. Thank you for being here tonight.